Okay, everybody, workday's over.
This is the best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Ovius and Giglio.
Don't look now, but the Carolina Panthers are 2-0. Sam Darnold is an early MVP candidate. The Panthers' defense is looking better than the 85 Bears. Let's freaking go, Giglio. You on board yet? Maybe. You're still adjusting your ice pack.
They look good. That's a good thing.
That is a good thing.
I told you too many people were. What was the phrasing I was allowed to use? Being too nice to the Saints?
Yeah, we were being too nice to the Saints.
Not we. I mean, everybody was.
I mean, yeah.
Because they played so well in that first game.
I was too. Look. Are the Panthers flawless? No. Have they taken advantage of what's in front of them? Yes. And that's not a knock. It sounds easy enough, but you know what? Plenty of teams don't do this with a favorable schedule, and then they just stumble over themselves. The Jets to start the season were the Jets. I mean, we kind of saw what happened with New England and how bad things are for Zach Wilson right now. And the weird thing is that the Panthers probably could have made that less of a game, but they do this weird thing in the third quarter where everything slows down, and they allow the Jets to make it more interesting than it needed to be. And then you got the Saints, who were dealing with a bunch of injuries on the defensive side, dealing with COVID issues on the offensive coaching staff. I think they had 7 staffers missing. But it's important to note that the most important offensive staffer wasn't missing, Sean Payton. Like, he's still making sure that things run, right? And Jameis Winston went back to being bad Jameis. And I think this is where we were being too nice. I think we were way ahead of ourselves on the isn't this great for Jameis Winston story train? If you kind of go back and you see the 5 touchdowns that they scored against the Green Bay Packers, they were inflated by field position. It wasn't like you had to throw a lot. I think you only had like 200 yards passing in that game. And when you're playing from a position of a lead, it's a lot easier to do things. Against the Carolina Panthers, they were down 17-0 early. The Panthers defense was swarming on them, and things started to get really hectic really soon for the New Orleans Saints. The only time that the Saints put some points on the board that looked mildly interesting was when Sam Darnold threw an interception. But overall, though, Sam Darnold was actually pretty dang good. So, shout out to the Panthers, man. They went out and did the thing.
And they have a short week and get the Texans without their starting quarterback. Well, starting 2 quarterbacks on Thursday night.
Yeah, it's still up in the air as to what's going on with Tyrod Taylor, although Tyrod Taylor was part of a larger story with
Is it really NFL. Up in the air with Tyrod Taylor? Man, that poor guy is just star-crossed. It's like
him and Carson Wentz, right? Because they're both hurt, too. Here's Matt Rhule, the head coach of the Carolina Panthers, on being 2-0.
I think it just means we're 1-0 this week and getting ready for next week, and it shows a lot of things.
Come on. Pause that. Are we really doing this? We're 1-0 this week?
Coach speak.
Jeez. Okay. All right, continue on.
I think it just means we're 1-0 this week and getting ready for next week, and it shows a lot of the things that we're doing well. It's like when you win or lose, you see what you do well, you see what you're not doing well. Like, you know, you can't get a field goal blocked and run back. I mean, that just can't happen in the National Football. They can't turn the ball over in the 10-yard line. They can have the ball first and goal. We make an unbelievable play, get him in 3rd and 9, then we let the quarterback run in, which we all, you know, you guys heard me say it this week. I have to keep Jameis in the pocket. So when those things happen, that's the mark of, hey, there's a lot of things still to improve upon. There's also a lot of great things that happened out there, you know. So we just have to be really honest, you know, about like, hey, what are we doing well? What are we not doing well? It's boring. It's the same thing I said last year, you know, when we would win or lose. It's just about trying to improve this week. And it's a short week. The Texans are a good team. It's going to be hard. So we have got to, you know, put this win behind us and understand that today's really like a Wednesday of a game week. I'm going to go home, hang out with my wife and kids, and then start working, you know, tonight. So it's going to be a heck of a turnaround.
Oh, Matt Rhule, the coachiest of coachy. 1-0 this week. A lot to improve on. I mean, couldn't be any happier than that. Guy gets to win, but also point out there's a lot of things that need to be improved. We got a block kick. Well, it's funny, that would be the only knock about the Carolina Panthers over the first 2 weeks. They still don't know what's going on with the kicking situation. They got Ryan Santoso. Ryan Santoso wasn't all that good, so they let him go. It doesn't cost him that that seventh round pick. It was a conditional pick. They bring in Zane Gonzalez off the Detroit Lions practice squad. He missed an extra point. That's the second one in a week, in 2 weeks, I should say. Matt Rhule mentioned that blocked field goal, and he had no touchbacks and six kickoffs. And you have to understand, in the NFL, they've made it really, really easy for you to have touchbacks. So it's not all perfect, but hey, Panthers are 2-0. They'll take it.
The Saints were a special kind of bad.
Yeah, they were.
They had six first downs. They were outgained 383 to 128. Like, a lot of that was the Panthers' defense, mm-hmm. but you have to also contribute that to whatever was going on with the Saints this week with their coaching staff and some of their other injuries. And I'll go to my deathbed on this one. Mm-hmm. If people tell you how great you are after a big win, that's the worst thing that can happen to you. I mean, seriously, I don't know how Belichick's done it all these years. If you want to give Belichick credit for anything, it's convincing his team that they're not as good as everyone says they are. Saban is the same way.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. The story of week one, though, seems to be injuries. So you go to Chicago where Andy Dalton had a knee injury, and that could help promote Justin Fields to be their starter, although not if you ask Matt Nagy, the head coach. We'll get to that in a second. Dolphins had Tua Tagovailoa go out with a rib injury on Sunday. Jacoby Brissett came in. Didn't look all that great. But then again, the Dolphins also didn't help me either. A lot of drop passes in that game. Carson Wentz, stop me if you've heard this one. Got hurt. Ankle this time. And people are just saying, see, I told you. It's entirely possible that Carson Wentz is going to screw the Eagles not once, but twice. Because you have to remember the way it works for the Colts and the Eagles trade of Carson Wentz is he has to play a percentage of games in order for that to be a first-round pick.
His previous injury was misdiagnosed from high school. Was this a middle school injury that they missed?
I think it was a kindergarten playground mishap.
No. Okay,
that's been lingering for a while. And yeah, you mentioned Tyrod Taylor with the Houston Texans, who the Carolina Panthers play on Thursday. Davis Mills is the QB they're going to go with, potentially, because Deshaun Watson is not going to see the field, according to David Culley, the head coach of the Houston Texans. So that seems to... And then you also saw some scares here and there.
I mean, Jarvis Landry.
Was it Baker Mayfield went out real quick. He came back in. Derek Carr went out for a little bit. Christian McCaffrey, also mm-hmm. with the Carolina Panthers. He had a little bit of an issue. But for the most part,
I tried to just say his name, Rand, without qualifying it as.
Yeah, you're.
He caught that though.
I know.
Yeah, I moved
that
on.
That was quick.
It was quick.
Yeah, I moved on. You mentioned Jarvis Landry. I knew exactly where that was. And the only other thing that was hurt this weekend would be Urban Meyer's ego. That would be the only other.
Why now?
Well, I mean, another loss. You know, so for the Jacksonville Jaguars. So Urban Meyer was asked if he got out coached. Think about this. This is a man who won in college for years and years and years. And then he gets to the NFL and things aren't going so great. And he gets asked, hey, were you out coached today?
Out coached? Oh, I don't know if we got out coached. Oh, we lost a game. That's a good question. I've been asked that question before. We lost a game.
Trevor mentioned that the team doesn't feel like it's a talent issue, but now at 0-2, does that make it a coaching issue?
It's an us issue. We got to make some plays. We have to do a lot of things better as a team. And that includes, when I say team, it's always us. You know, the one thing I'll never do is take a player and do that or a coach and do that. But do we have to get better? We're 0-2. You made that point. And we have to do we. When I say we, I'm talking about the whole team has to do a lot of better things.
So making matters worse for the Jacksonville Jaguars isn't necessarily Urban Meyer's comments after the game. It's the fact that the Jaguars' official Twitter account last night, close to 11 o'clock, put out this one of those image messages as a message for Duval with a little Jaguars logo. Hang in there with us. We're going to get better. The one thing about Jacksonville and the 904, go to sleep knowing there's not going to be any group working harder to get this thing flipped. Urban Meyer. As Drew McGarry, who now writes for Defector, so perfectly put this, that's the kind of message they plaster over a broken airport escalator. The only,
because it's always applicable. Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. It's like when
hang in there. It'll be ready tomorrow.
It's like when I've gone to Disney World and they've got a refurbished ride and it's saying, you know, we're making this a better experience for you. Well, I guess that's what Jacksonville's doing. We're hanging there with us. We're going to get better. You know what? I might just – is there a way we can actually make this about the show? Can I just, like, take that message, hang in there with us, we're going to get better? We could put, like, a fan logo.
Yeah.
And, like, you, Rand, and me, like, arms linked together. You know, like looking up, like, yeah, we're in this together. We're gonna get better for you. Didn't like that segment. We're gonna hang in there. We're gonna get better. Is that something we could do? We'll try.
Did you get outradioed today? On behalf of every Florida beat writer, every Ohio State beat writer who had to eat Urban Meyer's crap for all of those years.
Yes.
Please replay that clip. Oh yeah, well, you made that point. Oh yeah, we are 0-2 as you pointed out. Yeah, Herb. Welcome to the big time. Welcome to the NFL. Welcome to somebody actually telling you don't have any clothes on.
Have I been out radio today? That's not the first time I've been asked that question. Good weekend for the Triangle Schools. Good weekend if you include the Big Four, with Wake Forest making quick work of Florida State. Florida State currently leads the ACC in moral victories. After that, they have nothing much to show for their season, with an upset that happened at Jacksonville State, or against Jacksonville State, and then just getting worked by the Demon Deacons this weekend. Duke went out to a quick start against Northwestern. They held on to win that game. That's a pretty good turnaround game for Duke. Maybe their season isn't so lost after their loss to Charlotte at the beginning of the year. North Carolina looked like North Carolina from last season in a win against Virginia, which we'll get to in a second. And then NC State destroyed Furman. We've seen two games out of NC State now, Julio, where they've made really quick work out of teams they are physically better than. South Florida start off the season. South Florida's not a good team. I get it. Group of five still not a good team. Crushed them. Stuck with what worked. Defense and stick it to a game plan. Ran the ball, right? And then against Furman, more of the same. Furman's not very good. But in between, we had that game against Mississippi State.
You saw what happened to Mississippi State last week, I assume.
Yes.
They lost.
I know.
To Memphis.
I know. So the question is, who's the real NC State? The one that seems to be, like, has some sort of identity against these lesser teams? Or the one that, when the lights were on and it's, hey, show us something, they came up short because they have another show us something game on Saturday against a Clemson squad that defensively is good, but offensively is a mess.
Let me try it this way.
All right.
In the opener, North Carolina fell on its face, lost to Virginia Tech. And the question after that was, okay, what are you going to do the next time you get into this situation, the next time you're put in this opportunity?
Mm-hmm.
That opportunity was Saturday against Virginia. The result we now know was, as you said, the North Carolina of last year. We got 59 points out of the Tar Heels. We got the offense that we wanted to see. That was their response. Now for NC State, the first time they were in the spotlight, they fell on their face. This is their first chance to respond to that, to get back at in that opportunity. How are they going to respond? And I've got a little bit of a reality check for Dave Doran. This is year 9. And unless they fight on Saturday, I'm not saying they have to win, but they need to fight.
Mm-hmm.
He's lost the majority of the fan base. He lost the majority of the fan base with the Mississippi State game. Because, again, it's not just going down there and losing to the Cowbells. It's the entirety of the picture. Within this season, which is Mississippi State struggling at home against Louisiana Tech and then losing to Memphis, okay? And then it's the whole picture of the previous 8 years. At some point, you have to pick off a Clemson. At some point, you have to pick off Mississippi State or West Virginia or South Carolina. Otherwise, all you are is a bully.
Mm-hmm.
That's what NC State is under Dave Doran. They can bully South Florida. They can bully Furman. But when somebody steps to them, what happens? I wish it was just one game. I wish it wasn't 8 years of data I'm providing to you. That's what it can't be if you're Dave Doran. You have a lot of good things that you do. He does. But at this point, you have to have your moment. You have to show that you can rally your own team against a Clemson team that is vulnerable, that quite frankly, Georgia Tech is not a good football
team.
They're
not a good football team.
At home in Death Valley, there was absolutely no excuse for Clemson not to pull out their stick and say, I'm going to beat you over the head with this. And they didn't. Now, does that mean that won't happen on Saturday with Clemson?
Where they finally get right?
While Will Shipley and his entire family, not his entire family, his entire family tree went to NC State.
Yeah.
This has Anton Gill written all over it. The only thing that would be better is if Will Shipley hadn't done anything in the first three games, but he was actually pretty good against Georgia Tech. That would be the only way to top this.
I know that's what NC State fans are thinking right now.
If they're not, they should be.
NC State fans right now are thinking, okay, Clemson has not looked great, and they had this scare in a weird game because there was a lightning delay and everything else.
Sure.
It was a very strange game, but they had this scare against Georgia Tech. They know how Dabo likes to sprinkle in the tears of State fans and Dave Dorn into his coffee. Watch them get right. Watch DJ Uiagalelei finally run the offense the way that, or at least them have a game plan that actually tailors to what DJ is trying to do. All that stuff will come together at Carter-Finley on Saturday. I know that's what State fans are thinking. Here's Dave Dorn, the head coach of NC State, on the opportunity State has against Clemson on Saturday.
Games like this, a lot can be made of the matchups. You know, to me, this is more about us in this game, and we just need to do what we did last week and in the first week against much, much, much better competition. But we need to focus on doing our job. We need to focus on our fundamentals. We need to focus on our eyes, on our strain, on our finish, respecting the game of football and playing it one play at a time, and not letting the momentum swings in the game bother us. Just managing our opportunities and responding to adversity when it happens and creating more plays than they create. You know, at the end of the day, that's how you win these games. It's one player that has to step up at key moments. And I'm excited for the opportunity. You know, anytime you get to play a team like this that's been the gold standard in our league, it's a great opportunity for your football team.
That's Dave Dorn, NC State head football coach, about this upcoming game against Clemson. So they understand what's at stake on Saturday. Much like North Carolina understood what was at stake on Saturday, this past Saturday against Virginia. Dropping to 0-2 in the Coastal Division was not, as the men in Blazers would say, it would be suboptimal for your ACC division winning desires. And on top of that, North Carolina was questioned by Virginia. You'll remember going into this game, there were some Virginia players that looked at what North Carolina had done so far this year and said, yeah, you know what? They can be pushed around. They're a little soft, right? And North Carolina responded, especially the way they played in the second half, of shutting Virginia up. Virginia played well. Brennan Armstrong had a really good game. Dude put up 550 yards of offense. However, you need to stop people. You know who didn't punt on Saturday? Carolina did not punt on Saturday. What? That's insane. They also ran it down their throat. We've been sitting here talking about how do you replace two dudes who went to the NFL, right? And North Carolina found a way to do that against Virginia.
Apparently, it means you run with Sam Howell. Now has back-to-back 100-yard rushing game.
There is that, too, and it's good that they're actually relying upon him because he has the ability to do it. And speaking of Sam Howell, they clearly were paying attention to what Virginia said. By the way, what Virginia said wasn't untrue. I actually thought it was okay for them to point out that this is a problem for North Carolina, or this is some of the read on North Carolina. North Carolina then responded in kind, and here's Howell on UVA calling them soft.
Yeah, you know, I think we created a lot of momentum for us last week. You know, we had a good night, a really good night on the ground last week. And, you know, our O-line, we actually kind of banged up this week in practice and stuff. We had some guys and weren't able to practice. So, you know, coming into the game, we liked our game plan. We're kind of unsure how those guys were going to perform because a couple guys made their first start tonight. So, you know, and those guys, they responded so well. You know, Coach Searle did a really good job preparing those guys. And, you know, it really starts up front. You know, we told them guys all night long, all the points, all the touchdowns you see, it's all O-line. They did an incredible job. They dominated line scrimmage. I think they had a little extra motivation. A couple of guys on their D-line were publicly, you know, calling them soft and stuff. So, you know, they wanted to go out there and make a statement, and they did.
That was Sam Howell, quarterback for North Carolina, after the win against Virginia. I said something at the beginning of this segment that I think is true but also a problem. North Carolina looked like the North Carolina from last season. Good in the sense that they kept scoring points. Got it. But here's the bad part. The defense still needs to be able to make stops consistently. Let's not forget that they also blew, I believe that was a 24-7 lead, and found themselves suddenly in a shootout. And we saw this last year with North Carolina. They're going to have to be able to make stops. They can't always rely on a perfect offense to get them out of games. If they get pushed around early, if they have some misfires early, they can find themselves down early. We saw that at Florida State last year. We saw that against Virginia Tech at the beginning of the season. It's good that they look like last year, but there were some problems with last year, and it was, I'm looking at the defense specifically.
They didn't win a game like this, though, last year. So that's the positive.
In what way?
Where you mentioned they got out to the hot starts 24-7, but then they're down 28-24.
Yeah.
And really, in the second half, they outplayed them.
They did.
Like
they absolutely
the Virginia
did.
Tech game last year at home was a shootout,
mm-hmm.
but they were never in a situation where it was like, well, those lapses didn't cost them, right? The game at Virginia last year was a shootout, and they lost.
Mm-hmm.
So the game at Florida State where they made a bazillion mistakes, mm-hmm. right? Like, I don't know if we can even compare anything to that.
No, that was an outlier performance for them last
so
year.
So I thought there was at least the response there after falling down at that.
Sam Darnold, quarterback of the Carolina Panthers, is now 2-0 as a starter. According to ESPN Stats and Information, here's a fun fact. Darnold threw for 216 yards in the first half after throwing for 234 in the first half against the Jets the previous week. Darnold is the first Panthers QB to throw for 200 yards in the first half in consecutive games? What? That's insane to me. Meanwhile, the guy he's replacing, Teddy Bridgewater, don't look now, but he also looks pretty good in Denver. Who knew? Maybe there is something to the way that Joe Brady, the offensive coordinator, Matt Rhule, want to run the offense where these things look pretty good. They've taken advantage of what looks to be either a bad team in the Jets or a compromised team in the New Orleans Saints, but that doesn't matter. 2-0 is 2-0. Jonathan Jones, CBSSports.com, joining us now. He covers the NFL. He covers it incredibly well. He joins us now on the Heath Stewart Automotive Group Hotline. Jonathan, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. And, you know, Joe, it was crazy to think that Sam Darnold, the first Panthers quarterback with consecutive games of 200 or more passing yards in the first half, because remember, Cam Newton in 2011 began his career with consecutive 400-yard passing games, which was the first time in NFL history a rookie had done that. But I went back and I looked at it, and his week two when they faced the Green Bay Packers in the first half, he was 13 of 21 for 180 yards. Then he turned it on in the second half. So there you go.
I will say that so far, Sam Darnold has looked pretty good. The happy feet that people were concerned with, he's stuck there in the pocket. It helps that he has much better weapons with the Panthers versus what he had with the Jets. And I'm sure last week he looked across the field at Zach Wilson and said, hey, buddy, you have fun the rest of the year, which is exactly how things played out against the New England Patriots. But I do feel like we at 2-0, your record is your record, and not everybody takes advantage of what's in front of them the way the Panthers have in the last 2 weeks. But I do feel like the Panthers haven't truly been tested yet. Is that a miscalculation?
No, that is a correct and appropriate calculation, and that is one that, you know, you have to give them credit and in the same breath say exactly what you said and how you said it. And I was just talking with a source over there earlier today who said, yeah, I mean, the real test is going to be week four on October the 3rd at Dallas. That's where they're going to know kind of who they are, because they can very well go into that Dallas game 3-0. And I believe they're going to be 3-0 because they're facing Davis Mills and the Houston Texans on a short week. And we'll probably talk about that. But the fact is that they faced a New York Jets team with a very bad offensive line with a quarterback who, now we're starting to see it, developing some bad habits already, which is what I was afraid of when you put that offensive line in front of him with the four interceptions against the New England Patriots. And now Jameis Winston. Was he ever really as good, and were the Saints as good as we saw in week one? No, but are they as bad as we saw them in week two? I don't think so, but that's a credit to the Carolina Panthers and that defense, who they have the best rush defense in the NFL. No team has allowed fewer than 100 yards on the ground except the Carolina Panthers. 10 sacks leads the league. Basically, any sort of superlative you want to give the Carolina Panthers defense, they're number one or number two in the league in most statistical defensive categories. So things have turned around. This is a very, very important building block, but they know as well as we all know that until they face the Cowboys in Dallas on week four, they're not really going to know exactly who they are just yet.
Jonathan Jones, the Double J, CBS Sports, joining us here on the OG. That's Joe Ovius. I'm Joe Giglio. Double J, there's six other 2-0 teams besides the Panthers. Which one do you suspect is not for real?
Well, you mentioned Teddy Bridgewater earlier, and I don't know if I necessarily believe in the Denver Broncos. So that would be up there. I don't think that their defense is as good as a lot of people think that it may be. I do like their secondary, and I like how Patrick Surtain filled in. That would probably be one. I am pleasantly surprised by the Las Vegas Raiders at 2-0. And if I had to keep looking around, that's probably it. I would probably go with Denver as if you want to say the worst 2-0 team, because we remember, and I made this joke yesterday on CBS Sports HQ. Remember in 2015 when the Panthers were the worst 10-0 and then 14-0 team in NFL history? Well, who cares, you know? But no, I'd probably say the Broncos are the worst of the undefeateds.
The wins are over the Giants and the Jags while we're parsing records, right?
Oh, did we lose? We lost Jonathan? No, we lost
They do feel very Panther-like, though. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater is playing better than his previous stop.
Sure.
Their defense is pretty good.
Yeah.
They're kind of vanilla, right? I mean, there's nothing really sexy about the Panthers right now. There's nothing really sexy about the Broncos right now, but you can only beat the teams in front of you.
Jonathan Jones, CBSSports.com, joining us here on the OG. Alongside Joe Giglio, I'm Joe Ovius. All right, so the Panthers play on Thursday with the short week. What quarterback are they going to see on the other side? Who's starting for Texas? Who's starting for the Texans?
Yeah,
might as well be Texas.
That's right. It's going to be Davis Mills. And Tyrod Taylor got that hamstring injury somewhere along the time that he was rushing for that touchdown. You'll remember Davis Mills out of Stanford, or maybe you won't remember, but he was their first draft pick because they didn't have any draft picks in the first two rounds. And so they picked him up there in the third round. And if you transport yourself back to April, that was, they don't believe that Deshaun Watson's going to be around in 2021 for whatever reason, one reason or another. And they're going to keep going through this charade where every week you have to decide, is Deshaun Watson going to be active or inactive? And I think, Joe's, we were talking about this last week where every single week it's going to be near the start of the week, no, Deshaun Watson will be inactive. They're going to treat it on a week-to-week basis, knowing full well that nothing is going to change materially in his status from week to week. And so he's inactive this week, and unless something huge happens within the next 7 days, he will be inactive the next week, and you can continue that forward.
Jonathan Jones, CBS Sports, joining us here on the OG. Double J, is there anything, a commissioner's list, an NFL rule, something, is there anything preventing the Miami Dolphins trading for Deshaun Watson right now?
There's nothing from a league perspective
that
is preventing the Miami Dolphins. The unknown, of course, is what is. Number one, it is the unknown, but the Miami Dolphins have gone through that. Other teams have gone through the unknown.
Sure.
I think that they're
at Antonio Brown. I mean, he performed a disgusting act on a woman, and he shows up, he plays in the Super Bowl. I mean, come on. What are we talking about here?
Right. And so now it's just a matter of if the Houston Texans want to rid themselves of this embarrassment and drop their price down just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The Houston Texans don't believe that they have to or should. And so because of that, he remains a Houston Texan.
Jonathan Jones, CBSSports.com, joining us here on the OG. Alongside Joe Giglio, I'm Joe Ovius. All right. So if it wasn't injuries from this weekend, the other headline-grabbing topic for week two of the NFL is the uptick in taunting penalties. Nobody seems to like this, yet the NFL is hell-bent on getting taunting out or penalizing taunting. What's the disconnect on this topic?
I'll be honest with you, Joe. I'm surprised that it is such a big topic, and I guess folks weren't paying attention in the preseason. Benny LeMay had this huge running back for the Colts had this huge rush, and Panther fans remember because it happened against the Panthers, where he carried like six or seven, no hyperbole, carried like six or seven Panthers across the first down marker, several yards downfield, and then he got up and he flexed. And listen, you do what he just did, you have the right to simply flex.
Mm-hmm.
And he got flagged for a taunting penalty. And that was sort of the case in point. Hey guys, we're going to do this. It's not just Tyreek Hill flashing the peace sign as he runs by you, it's going to be stuff like that. And I found it ridiculous, and a number of players found it ridiculous, but that's what it was going to be. And I think the other disconnect for me that I'm sort of scratching my head about is the inability for fans to understand, you don't have to like this rule. I don't like this rule. And I think that it is unfair to players who, in the heat of the moment, they have to remember, wait, you can't flex after just this superhuman play. I think that's wildly unfair, and it's written by people who have never played the game. But
not even Najee Harris was allowed to flex like after the stiff arm.
Who are they trying to protect, I guess, is the question. Like, are we trying to protect? Like, this doesn't happen.
No, you already heard it. It was the rich white Giants owner, the old white guy. Is like, oh, we can't have these young black guys acting up around here.
I don't understand.
I just
explained institutional racism to you.
Just like that on sports radio.
I just solved it for you.
Oh, gosh. I didn't realize. Since you put it like that, I guess I never saw it that way, Joe.
Where were you in the 60s? but they really do think that they are doing this for the future generations. And I've heard this from coaches on the competition committee. I've heard this from senior referees and officials that they want to make the NFL wants to have a good example for kids watching the game, kids and youths and high school and college. So that's number one. But then number two, and the point that I really want to make here for fans is they are not flagging guys who are celebrating touchdowns by themselves or who are celebrating with their teammates. They don't want you to celebrate at the cost or at the expense of someone else. And so Lamar Jackson can somersault into the end zone by himself. But if he somersaults into the end zone while making some gesture at the opponent who's 2 yards away, that will be a flag. And the cognitive dissonance that I'm seeing from people not really getting that, even today, people who should get it, is driving me nuts.
If Pfizer bought commercial time as much as they did for Viagra and had a commercial where players were taunting other players, would it then be acceptable to expose the youth to?
What a question.
But it's true. Like, you're saying that I trust you in your reporting and what you're saying, that people are legitimately concerned about the youth of America. Like,
they do feel that
between
way.
Between Viagra and the Cialis commercials.
Oh,
like,
and don't forget.
Just wait till you have kids, Double J, and you're sitting there watching, like, what is that for? What does that mean?
And then there's.
At like five. And you're sitting here going, yeah, I'm going to explain all this stuff to you when you get a little bit older, but at five?
And then there's the gambling commercials.
Well, that's next.
So.
And that's another big issue. And that's something that we've heard from Tony Dungy. We've heard from a number of folks who. You know, I have no moral opposition to gambling, but I think reasonable people can agree or disagree that should it be as ubiquitous as it is becoming? And is that good for everyone all of the time? But, you know, folks make their own decisions, and the league has decided to hop in bed with them because it's going to make them a whole lot of money over time. They're not seeing billions right now. Yeah. Everyone says it's a multi-billion dollar industry. They're not seeing it yet. But eventually they will.
Jonathan Jones, CBSSports.com, joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio.
Covering the whole gamut here. Double J.
We have solved America's issues in about
10
minutes.
Should we talk about religion in the NFL?
Let's do it. Might as well.
I mean, you did bring up Tony Dungy, so we kind of checked off that square on the bingo card.
I was going to say, I could bring up a Tim Tebow eye black thing that he was ranting on over the weekend, but that's another story altogether. All right, so moving on to the Baltimore Ravens. I will admit that I got this one wrong after 1 week. I thought with the injuries to their running back, they would be too reliant upon Lamar Jackson and things would bog down. And he actually blew up some narratives last night against the Kansas City Chiefs because, remember, they can't come back in games because Lamar can't do it with his arm. He runs too much. But bold playmaking decisions by Harbaugh. Obviously, Lamar Jackson playing pretty damn well. That was an impressive win last night for the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, it really was. And I loved Harbaugh's call. There wasn't a fiber in me that thought that he made the wrong call there on fourth down because – this is your best player. This is a former unanimous league MVP who still has every single tool that made him the unanimous league MVP. And for one play, this is what you play for, to have that one play. This wins us the game. And if we don't get this, then we give it to the young GOAT and we say, okay, well, we got to stop him. and I don't like my chances there. So we're going to give it to Lamar. He had one bad interception. Another one wasn't necessarily his fault. That was the pick six where Sammy Watkins slipped. Patrick Mahomes had that miserable interception, perhaps one of the worst interceptions of his life that he has admitted to. And I'll tell you this, I was very impressed with the Ravens finally getting that monkey off their back with Lamar getting the win, now 3-1 against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. But more importantly, and I know the question was about the Ravens, but the Chiefs are going to have to run the football. And okay. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I know he fumbled there. That was a huge fumble. But he's going to have to – they're going to have to establish more ground game because the rules of football are still the same. You still have to run the ball to open up the pass. And Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs are great enough to go 13 and – what I forget the math now. 13-4, right, in 17-game season. They're great enough to do that. But they actually could go 16-1, 17-0. They're that good if they could have a consistent ground game. They do not. And that's why they lost last night.
Jonathan Jones, CBSSports.com. All right, man. Appreciate you coming on this week. Appreciate your appearances on CBS HQ. Obviously, we can read your stuff at CBSSports.com. We'll talk to you next week, man.
Yeah, look forward to us diving into all of the topics under the sun week again.
I know what we'll do. We'll actually get into the most taboo topic, Lexington style versus Eastern style.
That'll for this really, Shelby guy, yeah. Bring it on, baby.
Yeah, we'll really tick off some people. And then Jillia will refer to it as a barbecue instead of a cookout and then really get people
and
upset.
It'll be on.
So on. All right, man. We'll talk to you next week. We were talking about the Wolfpack earlier. Look, they did the thing against Furman. That doesn't really get you any sort of special prizes. They did the thing against South Florida. That also doesn't really get you any sort of special prizes. It was a missed opportunity on the road at Mississippi State where their offense couldn't really muster much of anything. And this is not a very good Mississippi State team. Now they have Clemson coming to town. And Clemson looks shaky, really shaky, especially on the offensive end.
Yes.
On offense. Defensively, Clemson looks the part. Offensively, though, they don't see – it's just the further decline of what we've seen out of Clemson.
Their skill players aren't that good anymore.
And now you're replacing Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne is not there anymore, and it really is coming home to roost. This is from David in Smithfield. I don't know. I feel like – should you know what? Let's go ahead and read his tweet as part of our It's Bad Takes again. You guys tell me if this is a bad take or not. So let's go ahead and get into the segment.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. Looks like we've got bad takes again.
So this is from David in Smithfield. Mark it down. State will beat Clemson Saturday. They go 10-2, play Pitt in the ACC championship game. Everything is setting up. BC quarterback is hurt. Miami's not playing well. 10-2. Losing one in the ACC, and then get the Mississippi State loss.
I'm curious now. Would the loss be to Carolina?
Probably, yeah. Probably. Although, especially the part that got
me. They're beating Clemson, I mean.
The part that got me wasn't NC State going 10-2. It's Pitt.
Pitt.
To save team that lost to Western Michigan?
Yeah, that's fine. Pitt can beat an SEC team. They just can't beat those pesky MAC teams.
All right, so bad takes. Another week of football in the books. Everybody's got some sort of overreaction. We have to determine if it's an overreaction or not. So what do we got first up, Ryan?
First up, it's from one of our favorites. We're going to go in the college ranks first. Our boy Paul Feinbaum,
all right.
Who's always repping the ACC well and being
sure.
Very even-keeled about
huge
how
fan.
Things are.
Huge fan.
Paul had some issues with Dabo and the offense, and he didn't go for Dabo's excuses.
You can give me the lightning delay and, you know, And old Dabo trying to talk about, man, we had to go back out there for 18 seconds and then had to go back in. I mean, who cares, Dabo? Just go out there and show some dominance. I mean, you can't do anything but hope your defense bails you out at the end of the game to prevail. I mean, that's embarrassing. That is really embarrassing for a team that a lot of folks had winning the national championship, Matt. This wasn't just a contender like Ohio State. This was a team that people had winning.
Paul.
A lot of people had winning this team.
No.
A lot of people. You know, when you kind of fudge around the areas, it kind of erodes from your main point.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, Clemson should be more dominant than they've been. Absolutely. But many, I mean, Alabama is about to be like a negative favorite to win the national championship.
Even after a scare. Even after Florida showed the template.
Because Dan Mullen is some kind of coach.
Yeah.
Some kind of coach.
All right, what else we got?
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Next up, we're actually going to stay in the college ranks because there's a fun little tidbit from Shane Beamer, who is now at South Carolina.
Yeah.
And they lost to Georgia like 100-0 or something. It was like 40-13. It was bad. But he was asked about the Georgia defense and why the Georgia defense got so much of a push up front. And his response was pretty candid.
Doing to maybe make things physical on the offensive side and maybe being able to get a push.
Who was doing?
Georgia's a defensive line. What were they doing to maybe make things difficult on the offense?
They've got like 105 star football players on their defense. They have a defensive lineman that weighs 340 pounds and runs better than everybody on this call. They've got five-star defensive backs. They're big and physical and fast. I mean, other than that, they're really freaking good. That's why they have the top defense in the country. They're hard to run the football on. So there wasn't some magical scheme they came out with tonight. They got five-star recruits everywhere, and they play really physical. Damn.
It's the damn at the end that gets me from Shane Beamer.
That implies, though, that Georgia hasn't had five-star recruits for the last, 30 years.
Yeah, they always have.
So, come on, man.
Nah, I mean, I get where Shane Beamer's coming from when you get throttled like that. And that's the easy thing to point to. But yes, Georgia does also have a propensity to not come up. They always have that weird early season loss that knocks them out. Head scratcher, like, you know, the old joke about Mark Richt. Oh, he's lost control of the team again. You know, like, all that kind of stuff has always been pervasive with Georgia. So, Shane, come on, dude. Do we have any else? Anything else?
Yeah, we got one more, actually. I'm going to change it up on you guys, I think. So, you know, obviously the Jets got rid of Sam Darnold.
Yes.
They have Zach Wilson now. Picked him number two overall. Mm-hmm. Tons of weapons there, obviously. He had four interceptions last week. Bart Scott of ESPN was not happy with Zach Wilson not taking accountability for those four picks, and he had this take.
This is a problem I have.
Never been booed before.
He sent a whole lot of we. Like, you. Not we. You. We knew that Bill Belichick was going to come in and take away what they do well, and they took away Corey Davis, and the fact that they didn't have Mims up is still a whole nother thing that's pissing me off.
Well, we'll get
that's
to that.
That's a whole
that.
Nother
yeah.
story.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you talk about he's saying he has to take accountability, and what Salah said that I think was very poignant, it's okay to win ugly. Like, it's like a dude that, like.
Win boring.
Yeah, win boring. Because you got time, you look at Tim Duncan. Boring. You don't have to be out here be like white chocolate. You ain't got to be out here super flashy, man. Sometimes simple is better. Less is more.
There's a lot in that.
I enjoy Bart Scott, but yes, there's a lot to unpack there. Yeah, Zach Wilson got booed. He threw a bunch of picks. Bill Belichick feasts on rookie QBs. I'm not going to take much more out of this. I mean, what did people expect out of Zach Wilson this year? Honestly, what did you expect? If you on one hand say, well, Sam Darnold gets to leave the big giant suck that is the Jets, and we expect big things out of them. What, was Zach Wilson supposed to go in there and prove otherwise? That's a work in progress,
man. If I gave you $100 to name the Jets starting running back.
You have $100 right here.
Could you?
Starting running back? No.
Yeah. I could. Frank Gore, right?
No. I don't know. I couldn't do it either.
I couldn't do it either.
I
couldn't do it.
I know they got Corey Davis as a free agent from the Titans.
Yeah.
That's their number one receiver. Like, I got nothing for you. So, like, Bart Scott, yeah, it's okay to get upset at the rookie quarterback, but, like, Peyton Manning threw for 26 interceptions his first year as a guy who started from day one and played every game. They're gonna make mistakes. That's what rookie quarterbacks do.
Ty Johnson.
If sure. you say so.
Sure.
I still don't know who that is.
Yeah.
Okay. Is he, like, from the Citadel?
Their backup is Michael Carter from Carolina.
Okay, we know him.
So, but
they drafted him. They drafted both Michael Carters, actually.
Mm-hmm. I'll close on this because I don't think we have the audio of it, but I think you and I both heard this segment, Julio. This was earlier today on Greenberg Show, which you can listen to on 99.9 The Fan from 10 until noon. And Dan Orlovsky was on Mike Greenberg Show, and they were talking about Carson Wentz. And he's standing on the sideline. I mean, if a guy's standing on the sideline, it makes you wonder just how hurt he is, you know, that kind of stuff. And Dan Orlovsky proceeds to tell this story about how he was, I don't care what the doctors say, I'm going out there because I'm a competitor. And there's a difference between playing hurt and being injured and all the football cliches that we always hear. He was essentially questioning Carson Wentz's toughness for not going out there with an injury. According to Frank Reich, here's Orlovsky on Mike Greenberg's show earlier today.
If you're hurt, I feel like you got to go back out there. You know, I just do. I've said this. Your team gave up. This organization gave up a 1 and a 3 to go
figure
get
it
you.
Out, right?
Kind of put their neck out a little bit on the line.
You got to figure it out.
It's a big game. There's 2 minutes left in the game.
Figure it out.
It's basically a drive. If he's injured, I get it. Like, if he's injured and there's more significant damage to it, I can understand that. But part of me wants you to go, I don't care what the doctors are saying.
Yeah.
I'm going back out on the field.
Yeah, so that was Dan Orlovsky. Sorry, that was on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max.
He told the story twice. The best part of it was when he gets into his own anecdote about this game when he was with the Colts in 2011. When they were playing against the Jaguars, and he came back out. They lost 19-13. That was the game that clinched the number one overall pick for them, by the way.
An update on Carson Wentz's injuries. He has not one, but two sprained ankles. One of the ankle injuries was from earlier in the game. According to Stephen Holder, who covers the Indianapolis Colts, it doesn't seem as though it limited given the amount of scrambles he made prior to leaving the game, but he is now on two bum ankles. We'll see what his...
Got to get back out there, Joe.
Quote from Frank Wright, we'll have to see it as we go regarding his availability and then map out a plan for this week.
Also, by the way, they gave up those draft picks knowing you were brittle. That's on them. That's not on you.
Yeah, that is on them. And on top of that, it's entirely possible that the Philadelphia Eagles don't get the draft picks they wanted because it's entirely possible Carson Wentz
the minimum requirement.
Right. He had for those who forgot, Carson Wentz has to play a percentage of the season in order for that trade to be fully fulfilled. Otherwise, there's an alteration. Carson Wentz finding ways to screw the Eagles not once, but twice. Let's give you our hot and cold from the weekend. It's brought to you by Any Day Heating and Cooling. A couple things we wanted to highlight before we get out of here. What was your hot of the weekend, Julio?
Jim Phillips.
Okay, the ACC commission.
Ninja Swaff-esque. Oh, the ACC's in the tank. Can't beat anybody outside the league. Hold the phone, my friends.
Uh-huh.
Here comes Jim Phillips' former school, Northwestern, to the Triangle to take on Mighty Duke. Same Duke team that lost to Charlotte. What happened? Oh, the Blue Devils won.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm not saying the Code Red was involved here. I'm not saying Jim Phillips went Colonel Jessup on us.
That's a bold statement.
I'm just saying it's an awful coincidence that the only good win for the ACC is now at Jim Phillips' former school's expense.
My hot of the weekend goes to the Baltimore Ravens. No, not because they finally got over on the Kansas City Chiefs last night, which, hey, they went 4th and 1. Lamar Jackson looked great. Finally got over the hump against Patrick Mahomes. No, the reason why I want to give them the hot of the weekend is because 2 weeks ago, Michael K. Williams died at his home in New York. He's probably most famous for some of the character actors he's played on HBO shows, like Boardwalk Empire and The Wire, where
Omar.
He was Omar, which was based in Baltimore. So at the beginning of the game, they did the whistle. The hunting we will go. And like that was all they did. And the crowd realized what was going on before the team came out on the field, and they lost it. So shout out to the Baltimore Ravens for doing that. Who was your cold of the weekend?
So at the University of Miami won 5 national championships in a 20-year span between 83 and 2001. What's notable there, Joe, it was by 4 different coaches. I bring this point up to illustrate that as we worry about Duke and Syracuse basketball going forward, like, is it more than just one guy? You don't have that concern at Miami. If you're a good coach, you can win at Miami. Manny Diaz is not a good coach. He's a used car salesman. Mm-hmm. His dad was the mayor of Miami. He has made his name as such ever since. He'll be a great defensive coordinator somewhere. Heck, he'll be great on ESPN. He can go back to his TV roots.
Yeah.
But man, oh man, Miami is a freaking mess. And it's not because of talent. It's because of coaching.
They can't get out of their own way, and it's really disappointing to see. So my cold of the weekend goes to Dan Orlovsky, ESPN. Look, I understand that in this business, especially when you're at ESPN, you're on TV a lot, and you have to find ways to differentiate yourself. But the one thing that I cannot stand is when we start getting into the, was this guy hurt? Was this guy injured? What's the situation? Go out there and be a tough guy. And that's exactly what happened when they were talking about Carson Wentz earlier today on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. Carson Wentz got hurt again. Stop me if you've heard this one before. And it's one thing to make the jokes about it, but it's another to question the toughness. And that's exactly what Dan Orlovsky did today.
If you're hurt, I feel like you got to go back out there. You know, I just do. I've said this. Your team gave up. This organization gave up a 1 and a 3 to go
figure
get
it
you.
Right?
Kind of put their neck out a little bit on the line.
You got to figure it out.
It's a big game. There's 2 minutes left in the game.
Got to figure it out.
It's basically a drive. If he's injured, I get it. Like, if he's injured and there's more significant damage to it, I can understand that. But part of me wants you to go, I don't care what the doctors are saying.
Yeah.
I'm going back out on the field.
I don't care what the doctors are saying. Come to find out, Carson Wentz had not one, but both ankles sprained in Sunday's loss to the Rams. What are you supposed to do with two bum ankles, man? Still go out there? Hey, when we do that.
Your shoulder's still fine.
Go out there. Show you're a tough guy. Even though it... Are you supposed to help the team with two sprained ankles? How are you walking with two sprained ankles?
Yeah.
It's time for Rant 2.
Acapella the news.
Ah, well, boys. Sam Darnold, as we knew, would carry the Panthers to 2-0 start this year.
We knew
it was going to happen.
Of course.
So I had to sing about him today because, I mean, he just, you know, he's showing out. And I did it in my best Eminem impression.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, this is... I forgot how angry Eminem was in this song. I couldn't really replicate that.
Yeah,
but
well, try.
We'll see.
I sit back in the backfield just waiting. Watching the safety, he's anticipating my throw, but I know I've got options. Unlike New York, since his Panther adoption, they even gave me my boy Robbie. He's a blur and superb. He met him in the lobby. He's still not sure what that bear do. NYC has got nothing compared to the starts off the chart for 2 weeks in. Man, it feels good to stick it to Sean Payton. No one was sure to expect when I replaced Teddy. I knew I was ready. Then now you got to give me my due. Even though we just got through with week two, now this short week it'll fly by. Watch out for Joey Slide, the kicking guy. I'm Sam, whatever you say, I'm Sam. If I wasn't, then this would have been a sham. In the past, you'd still be wishing for Cam. But so far, you're thankful you got Sam, because I'm Sam.
Just watch out for Joey Slide, the kicking guy, next week, or this week.
Jeez. Yeah, you know, the Panthers' kicking situation is not good. I'm waiting for another waiver wire pickup for the Carolina Panthers, as though it's a fantasy team.
Sure.
Do you know how you found the Redbone version, the Kids Bop version of Redbone?
Oh, no, yes.
That was Kids Bop of Eminem.
Oh, okay.
Really was.
I'm like, okay with that.
Super sweet and docile.
That
rant.
Wasn't angry?
No, Rand, I don't think you're capable of angry. I don't think you're capable of angry.
I can't angry rap, apparently.
I don't. Yeah, I don't think so.
You've been listening to the Best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 6 p.m., and you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.